Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Yes, everybody, we are back in your lives. It's Inside Boxing Live. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri. We are presented by PPV.com, the leader in pay-per-view events streaming. We have some big fights coming up on the schedule, so join us over on PPV.com for those in the live interactive chat. Boxing is buzzing right now, and we love our presenting sponsor, PPV.com. Chris, I'm home. I am in my humble abode. Back from Dallas, Texas, Mike Tyson, Jake Paul, Super Bowl event, which was out of control. Happy to be home, but man, I'm still kind of buzzing a little bit off of that event because it was something. I don't know what you guys thought about the fight, but the event as a whole was, it felt like the Super Bowl at times. What's up, Chris?
Well, Dan, welcome back, man. It's cool seeing you on the big screen for the big fight. But I'm buzzing to hear what it was like over there, you know, because fight weeks are always fun, and you know, the bigger the fight week, the more the stuff that's going on. I'm sure there was a ton of stuff going on fight week. So what was that like? What was fight week itself like? Other, you know, beyond we're not talking about the fight yet. We're talking about the fight week.
The fight week felt. I went to the 2020 Super Bowl right before COVID hit in Miami, and it felt like that. I had never been to a Super Bowl. I've been to some big events, but the Super Bowl, in terms of like the corporate aspect of it, with Netflix involved in this and their first foray into live, this is the first live sporting event Netflix ever did. And it was Mike Tyson, it was Jake Paul, but it was more about them getting into a live event. So it was felt very corporate, like huge parties. They were going to like these lunches where there's like 300 Netflix employees and there's all these advertisers and there's free stuff and there's celebrities. It felt like the Super Bowl in that way. Like the fighter hotel was buzzing, but it wasn't buzzing with like fight people. Like you would see like Evander Holyfield floating around. You'd see some familiar faces, some PBC guys, some top ranked guys. But you would also see like these guy, like these guys and these ladies that look like executives that have never been to like a fight. That this is like their big outing, and this is like their big corporate event, and they just look rich and they just look important. There's a lot of that all week long, in terms of the. Event, and then like the weigh-in and the press conferences were
so
crazy.
Dan, you're saying you fit in just fine. They look like you.
I might have been on Netflix for a total of 2 minutes, but I don't feel like that just yet. But the weigh-in was fun. The press conference was a little less lively because Mike just didn't feel like talking at that point, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But the weigh-in is when things really ramped up. The slap and all that, and now is kind of like old news. But in terms of just like the fight week, it felt big. It felt like more than just a fight. It felt like in a global event. It turned out to be that, as like 65 million homes watched it in the U.S. and way more worldwide. It felt like a cultural event, like just below the Super Bowl in terms of the memes, in terms of everyone stopping what they're doing. I saw Grubhub had more traffic and DoorDash had more traffic on this night than the Super Bowl in terms of delivering food.
Wow. So people are staying houses to watch a fight and delivering the, getting the food delivery.
Right. That
makes sense. That's pretty cool.
And this is all a testament to Mike Tyson.
Yes.
Obviously it takes two to tango. Jake Paul, worthy adversary here.
Well, damn, Mike is the most famous person in the world.
He is.
If you really think about it, Mike Tyson is literally the most famous person on the planet.
He's top five. He's up there with Trump. He's up there with Elon Musk, I guess. Like, but Tyson might be the guy.
He's number one, dude. He's not gonna be number one.
You think he's number one?
Absolutely number one. Between the face tattoo, just the iconic visage, and the fact that everybody's been watching him for 40 years, like, yeah, dude, it's got to be Tyson.
And this is interesting because, like, I see a lot of people upset with the event, right? Leading up to it, they were upset. Leading up to it, then afterwards, they were upset, even though I thought it was a great event. And a lot of the ire and a lot of the anger was directed only towards Jake Paul. Like, I can't believe Jake Paul did this. I feel so bad for Mike. I can't believe that Jake Paul would do such a thing. I'm like, guys, you understand.
You know he signed up for this, right?
Mike Tyson signed up for this. Mike Tyson.
And he's making $20 million.
He's making $20 million, or at least Mike Tyson signed up for this. I understand that that's just how beloved he is, that no one is going to throw. No one's going to be like, I can't believe Mike is doing this. They say, I can't believe Mike. Hope he doesn't get hurt. They're not saying like, disgusted that Mike Tyson is stepping in the ring. They were disgusted that Jake Paul would fight a 58-year-old man. That's interesting. That just shows you how much love that Tyson has. It was an interesting sentiment, but yeah, it just felt like an event more than a fight. It felt like kind of like Mayweather McGregor, but with a little different tint to it, where Netflix involved and it being, it's like hard to explain what it felt like. It didn't feel like your traditional fight week at all. It felt like a Super Bowl slash marketing event. And from that aspect, they freaking knocked it out of the park.
Well, yeah. I mean, in terms of the powers that be that were involved, yeah, it's very corporate-esque. It's very it's huge, you know, big industry type stuff, corporate level. But actually, in terms of the event, I was saying this. I'm like, I mean, the card was actually pretty good. There was actually some, you know, some important fights that were on the card. So, I mean, in terms of the event, I wasn't upset about the event. Again, it was a sentiment you said earlier. It's like, it's just kind of sad that Mike is 58 years old and going out there and fight a guy 30 years younger than him. But in terms of the event and the build up and everything, the lead up, I mean, it looked pretty awesome. I mean, they had Netflix shows and documentaries on the lead up. You know, I loved all the nostalgic Tyson stuff that we were seeing for the last couple weeks. You know, just every time I open my phone, I see not Mike Tyson from the 80s knocking somebody's head off. Like, it's awesome. Mike's interviews are awesome. They've always been that way. So,
yeah. What was funny was, like, I obviously was really focused on getting my little segment done. So that was, like, on my mind all week. I was like, I got to nail this, and this is really big. Got to prepare. Got to get my rest. Can't drink too much at these parties. And I woke up. And I was really laser focused, and I woke up on Friday morning, and I went out and got a coffee, and I said, holy shit, like, this is a Mike Tyson fight night.
Yeah.
Like, in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. Right. I never watched Mike fight live. I was just old enough to, you know, order the pay-per-views with my family and stuff, but it wasn't the same as like being like older than 18 or older, or an adult. And I woke up and I got my coffee, and I'm walking around Dallas, and I'm like, yo, it's a Mike Tyson fight night, like, in 2024. Like, what the hell is going on? Like, this is a culture in the 80s and 90s. This was a cultural event. It's like, this stopped the world, and the world did stop on Friday night.
It did again. The guy can still do it. He still moves the needle. That's the craziest thing about this whole experience.
You're absolutely right. And to see all the celebrities that turned out, to hear the crowd, to feel the energy, to see it on the internet, to see it was all a big tribute to Tyson. And you may not have liked a lot of aspects of this, but one thing we take away from it is that Mike, he may not even be a top 10 heavyweight. Like, when people say he's the greatest of all time, I kind of cringe a little bit because he's not. But he's probably up there in terms of boxers with Muhammad Ali as most beloved. Despite all the warts, despite all the transgressions, he is one of the most beloved figures in boxing, and definitely in sports.
And Dan, I think that's culturally how it is with very famous boxers. We're all kind of bad guys, and, you know, but we get away with it because we're not expected to be angels. We're not expected to be saints. Like, you know, Ali was a philanderer and he did a lot of other things, and Sugar Ray Leonard had his, you know, issues, and even Oscar De La Hoya more recently. And Mike, man, like, guy went to prison. Like, it's not, these people aren't saints, and we're fighters. We're not supposed to be. So no one expects us to be statesmen. No one expects us to be politicians. So we get away with a lot more. But at this point, like, Mike has earned it. He can do no wrong.
Yeah. In terms of the fight, and I was watching it from the host position with Andre Ward.
Hard to watch. It was a hard watch. Not going to lie.
I was ringside for it. I got booted from ringside. And I ran back to the host position where I did the hit. And I was with Andre Ward. And we both had the same exact feeling. We were kind of watching it with, like, one hand over our eye.
Yeah.
And we were pacing. We were both pacing back and forth. We were both like, I was like, don't get hurt, don't get hurt. Like, put your hands up, Mike. Like, In terms of the fight, I Jake Paul said it afterwards. I didn't want to hurt someone that didn't need to be hurt. I don't think he carried him. I just don't think he unloaded on him either. I thought Mike came out in the first two rounds with a little more movement. But the number one thing that I took from it, and Andre was saying it as well, was like, you, Chris, you can test this too later on in your career, is that your mind is saying, do this, but your body is absolutely not doing it. He could not pull the trigger. He threw under 100 punches. He landed under 20 punches in the fight. I expected a little more, maybe a few more moments from Mike, but that just wasn't there.
But he's 58, Dan. I know it's easy to be like, you should have done this. But like, dude, just the fact that he was in there and even made it, I don't know, man.
I expected more in terms of, because Jake, his level, you know, like.
Well, I think we got a real answer on Jake's level at this point. He is really not good.
It's hard to say, because I don't think he was giving 100%. He wasn't going in there to take him out. I honestly believe he could have knocked him out at any moment in the fight.
I disagree. I think he was trying, and he was throwing punches from six miles away. Oh, yeah. He was throwing. And Roy Jones said this. He goes, Mike's a lot harder to hit than you think. He's very twitchy still. He was able to get his head offline just enough. You know, he just kept moving. And you know, Jake threw a right hand in that first round. Like, I mean, would have took Mike's head off if it landed, but it didn't, because Mike just got right under it. I don't know, man. It looked to me, especially with that first little slip and rip that Mike threw when he landed that one left hand early on, that, like, it was like a power jab. That rocked
the moment
Jake
of
back.
The fight for him.
It was the only moment he had. It was the first round. But I think Jake literally was like, I can't get knocked out by a 58-year-old man tonight. Like,
that
this guy
played into it as well.
Yeah, he's like, I can't take. He took no chances. He didn't want to take any chances. I'm telling you, dude. Right. I don't think he
cared. There weren't any agreements made. There was something figured out in the ring, and what was figured out in the ring from Jake was, I don't want to hurt someone that doesn't need to be hurt. I don't want to get knocked out by a 58-year-old guy who's still dangerous. Mike just completely ran out of steam. The fans didn't know what to do in the arena. Like, the feeling of right before the main event, and the feeling of when Tyson's walkout. To the first minute of the first round was electricity like I haven't felt at ringside. And then as it played out, the fight, we realized, like, just the severity of Mike's legs and gas tank.
Oh, the gas. Is when the wasn't even the gas tank. Like, the balance was really off.
Right. And that's when the fans didn't know what to do. They got really quiet. 72,000 people. Really quiet. And then it was like, do we boo? Is that disrespectful to Mike? Then we heard some boos. And then, like, when the fight ended, there was nothing. There was no cheer. Everyone just kind of walked out. But it's different when you're there.
I didn't think about that, but being there, that's interesting. Because I know I left and I felt really weird. Like, I had a weird pit in my stomach. And it was 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm driving home from the studio because we did a watch along for Pro Box, me and Paulie. And I felt like, I don't know. I felt uneasy. You know, like, I've never left a fight. Never left a fight thinking that. I was driving home and I'm like,
You didn't want to see him get hurt. You didn't want to see him get splattered. You didn't want to see that type of.
I didn't want to see him viral moment. I didn't want to see him have a stroke either. Like, you're talking about a 58-year-old man. You're not talking about, like, you know, a guy in his late 40s, which is too old. You know, like, he could have had a heart attack out there. The stress on your body for a fight in front of millions of people, man. I've been there. I know what that stress and that anxiety can be like. To be able to deal with that at his age, it's incredible.
He didn't have a stroke. Did see his butt cheeks, though. What the heck? Like, this guy is the most unintentionally funny person in the world.
That interview broke the internet. No, wait. We got to talk about the whole interview.
That was his son interviewing
him.
His son is interviewing him.
And he said, you know, he's basically asking him what's going to happen. He's like, I'm gonna win viciously.
Vicious win.
And then he tells his son he loves him and gives him a kiss on the cheek. Turns around, full ass cheeks.
Like,
so he goes from vicious win, I love you, son, Mike Tyson's ass.
The comedic timing on that. Like, if you wrote that as an SNL skit, people wouldn't execute like that. But, like, he's the most unintentionally funny guy ever.
Dude, that's what Mike is, though. Like, Mike walks in a room and he's like, there's an aura about him. Everything he does is fucking gold. Like, everything. Even things you're making fun of him for are gold.
Another thing, too, is that he was really quiet during the press conference, and he was doing weird. Like, he did that interview with that young girl, and he was talking about death, and it was like, he was so locked in.
That reminded me of the Hezbollah, or whatever, when he didn't know it was a kid.
if you catch him at the wrong time, I did an interview with him at the Spence fight, and he was talking to me about death and where do we go from here, aliens, we're all,
yeah,
maybe
the alien,
we're all
aliens. Alien interview.
He's looking into my eyes, and I was like, I need to end this interview immediately because he has this look in his eye. Like, this could go, like, he could slap me, that he could, you know, push the mic out of my face. I was like, end this interview, get your sound clip and get out of there. But that was the feeling, like, during the fight week, too, with Tyson is, listen, he fought in the late 80s and early 90s. This is before Instagram. This is before the internet. There was media. There was fanfare. I mean, he was the most famous person in the world in the late 80s and early 90s, but not like today. Not like with these YouTubers, not like with camera phones in his face, not like with advertisers everywhere having to get a piece of him. And I think he was not fully prepared for all of the media that goes into a modern day fight week. Like, obviously he's Mike and he thrives off of this. But even for him, I feel like was like, holy shit, like that's enough already. And when he got up on the press conference, he just didn't have anything left. He just, I just want to fight. Whereas Jake, his whole life is marketing. He's a master marketer. He might be the best marketer in the world today.
Absolutely,
he is. I don't know what you think about him as a fighter.
No, he's brilliant. I don't care what you think about him as a fighter. He's a brilliant. He's a marketing machine. Him and his brother both are. They're incredible at this.
Well, you got to think about it from that aspect. The kid is just a kid from Ohio who made videos on Vine and then YouTube, goes on Disney, gets into boxing, and works his way up in 4 years to fight Mike Tyson with 72,000 people. I understand there's a Mike Tyson event on Netflix, and a majority of the people there wanted to see Mike, but it takes two to tango. And he had to go in there with a worthy adversary in terms of an event of this magnitude, and that's what Jake Paul is. And you can't deny it, man. 72,000 people, 65 million homes so far on Netflix. Arthur Beterbiev calling out Jake Paul, like Carl Froch calling out Jake. What's one thing for Froch and these guys? Beterbiev? Like, I would be humbled. I would be ecstatic if I was Jake Paul. I saw that.
Dan, Mike made $20 million. Beterbiev didn't make $20 million to fight Bivol. Of course he's going to call. Everybody's going to call this guy out. Why not?
The point being, it's like, you may not think his skills are whatever, and you may not like it, but there's no doubt he is one of the money guys in boxing right now. He might be the money man in boxing right now. He might have overtaken Canelo.
He is the cash cow. Absolutely. No one makes $20 million to fight Canelo. Like, you make $20 million to fight Jake Paul.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have these guys calling them out. And no, the skill level is nowhere near that. And I think that was one thing, I'm going to repeat. We learned some things about Jake. He looked like a novice because he's in with an actual boxer, even though the guy was 58. But he's got a long way to go in terms of that.
I don't know. I mean, you have your opinion. You have your eye. I thought that he could have closed a distance numerous times.
No, he didn't know how to. He wasn't creative enough, which is mind-blowing. But I don't know. No legs. He looked scared. He looked scared.
I think there was a part of him that didn't want to, like, was cautious of Mike. But I also think there was part of him, like he said, I don't need to hurt someone that doesn't need to be hurt. I think around the third round, he realized that I'm not going to knock him out. And even his brother, Logan, was pissed off that he didn't go for the knockout. I think he could have knocked him out at any moment. That's just my opinion.
Definitely the last couple rounds, he could have pressed on the guy, but he looked tired too, though. He's a sprinter as well. The 2 minute rounds, it was funny, like we were talking about it, the 2 minute rounds was probably for Mike, but also it's pretty good for Jake, because the way he fights, he just throws big shots, big haymakers, and then he rests and he gets to do it again. He's a sprinter, so it definitely helped him as well. But there was no creativity. He didn't get behind the jab. He didn't throw anything off the jab. He just throws the right hand. He throws the jab by itself. Jab's pretty
good.
But
I've seen him do that before. That's why it was weird.
Yeah, but you never seen him do it with someone who actually has head movement. Literally, no one ever moved their head. You know, and
true.
You know, and another fighter. The only other time where he fought somewhat of a boxer was Tommy Fury. Couldn't close the distance then either. So when you got a guy,
he needs to run it back with Fury.
Yeah, has to at this point, but
he can go ahead.
I was going to say, is he ever going to move down a weight again? I mean, he looks huge.
I don't know. That's the thing. Like he's got to be a heavyweight now. He said, I'm not a heavyweight. He said, my I feel better at like 190, 195. He's 227 for this. That's just too big. I'm very curious where he's going to go. I've always been curious about his moves and what he's going to do, because it's not your traditional boxing career. So I'm interested in what they're going to draw up. I know MVP is static.
You can't really believe his moves either, because he said he was going to basically do grassroots. I'm going to fight real boxers. I'm going to be a world champion. And then he announces a Mike Tyson fight. So,
well, the thing is, if you have that opportunity, you're going to take it. But the thing with him is he could literally do what he could go. If you say, I want to go grassroots, he can go and do that. If I want to go, if he goes, I want to fight Beterbiev, he can do that. But I don't know if he will.
That's the thing. He changes his mind whenever.
Right.
And when you said the opportunity, he didn't grab the opportunity to fight Mike Tyson. He put that offer out there. You know, that was him. He got this thing. That's the thing. He's in the driver's seat with all these decisions. Mm-hmm. So if he wants to do grassroots, he can do it. But he also will be like, I can go grab easy money doing it this way.
Yeah, it's the difference between him and everyone else. Is like if these offers are going to come. Yeah. Tyson revealed yesterday that stomach ulcer was a lot more serious than was originally let on. Eight blood transfusions, 25 pounds lost, nearly died. They kind of alluded to it in the Netflix thing where there was a moment where Tyson said he asked the doctors in the hospital, am I going to die? And they didn't say no. And it was weird. I was like, for a stomach ulcer? So it turns out that was a lot more. And just to put a bow on the actual Tyson stuff, like he said it, like, for me to get in that ring after what I came back from and for me to do it for my family to see, like, this is your dad and all that and all the love that he's getting from all over the world. That was the coolest part to me. It was an awesome event. MVP did a great job. Netflix, DraftKings, everybody. But to see Tyson and for him, and even afterwards, he said, I do this for myself. I don't care what anyone else thinks. This was something for me to do. And he went 8 rounds. And didn't fully embarrass himself, and he gave us a night, and he gave us an event.
I don't think he embarrassed himself at all. I mean, the statement he made, that long statement that he put out about that whole thing that you just alluded to, that was stately. That was like a really, really well thought out, put together piece. He's really turned into he's always been an icon, but now like you're seeing all the experience and all the wisdom coming to the forefront. And I think it was a really cool way to put it. And ultimately, because we're moving on from the Tyson stuff, we're going to talk about some real fights next. But ultimately, the way I take from this is Jake Paul put on a great event, and there's a lot of good fighters on the undercard that got a lot of exposure. They got a lot of money, which they deserve, this Serrano Taylor specifically. And I'm at the end of the day, I'm proud of Mike for getting back in shape, for being able to go out there at a 58-year-old man. He looked phenomenal on the scales. He looked scary walking to the ring. You know, he didn't throw a lot of punches, but whatever. I'm not, I don't think he embarrassed himself for his age and fighting a guy 30 years younger than him. And the fact that he didn't get hurt, which is a huge takeaway, is I'm proud of him for being able to do what he did. It's an incredible feat.
Yeah, it was awesome. In terms of Netflix and boxing, I know there was the buffering issues.
That's all people were talking about. We had a live chat going, and everyone was talking. Luckily, Paulie and I, our stream was fine. We didn't have any problems, so we were good the whole time. But it was a big issue on the internet.
Netflix, like the executives that I was around, like they were like almost looking at it like, oh my god, like this is so big that we broke it, and they quickly fixed it for the main event. But like, it just showed you how many people were watching it, and it just showed – I was very curious what Netflix is going to do now because early January, WWE Monday Night Raw, every single Monday night there's going to be their broadcast on Netflix. That's not as big as 65 million, but they're going to be doing live sports. Right, they're doing two NFL games on Christmas Day. Still going to be big, 20, 30 million they're expecting for that. And now this was their first foray into boxing. There's nothing that indicates they're going to do consistent boxing shows. But I do think that Netflix will be in the mix for fights. I think they're going to be part of the discussions. If there's a big enough fight out there and these two fighters are not tied to a specific network, I think the promoters are going to go around to everyone. They're going to go to Amazon. They're going to go to DAZN. They're going to shop it around. And I think that Netflix is going to get a call now, and they're going to say, are you guys interested in staging this event? It's not going to be as expensive as it is for Paul and Tyson. But I think Netflix dipped their toe in. I think they liked what they saw. And I think they might be interested in staging fights, but not like consistent. You know, they're not going to get like a DAZN level type of schedule. But if it's a big enough fight out there, I think Netflix could potentially be in the mix in terms of airing more fights down the line.
But Dan, let's be pragmatic here. Let's be realistic. What fights could be that big?
I know. That's the scary part.
About? Like you got.
That's the scary part of this week. Is home, like
this fight, this card, this event, this matchup. There's nothing even close to it. There's nothing.
Nothing.
And I think that's part of the reason Netflix had problems with their buffering. They just didn't really understand how big of a star Mike Tyson is. Like, this is massive. Mike could fight anybody. It doesn't matter. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Mike fight again, honestly.
He didn't say no, and he called out Logan Paul.
There's going to be a big push because, you know, these numbers are coming in. This money that was made that day, that night, that week, it's Mike. It's Mike. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see Mike again.
Part of me was like, I was loving this whole week, and part of me, but there was part in the back of my mind, like, all right, when Sunday comes around, when Monday comes around, like, it's a little scary that the biggest fight of the year is going to be Jake Paul and Mike Tyson.
It makes me worry. And 58-year-old Mike Tyson.
It makes me worry a little bit about the health of the sport. It makes me worry about the stars of the sport. I mean, not every fight is going to be that. We know that. That's not the 80s anymore. It's not the 90s. But when you say, is there anyone that can generate that? Yeah, Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis, Canelo Alvarez, I think could potentially fight on Netflix. But here's – maybe. But here's the thing. Like, it's Netflix will get involved, but they're not going to – they don't want to do a fight like this magnitude with the budget that they did for this. That's not good business. They would go in on a way smaller scale, and they would maybe Canelo versus Crawford or Canelo versus Jake Paul, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility. Ryan Garcia versus Tank 2, whenever that could happen. Who knows what PBC will be at that point and all that. So I do
think
they're...
What about even Ryan and Haney? I feel like there could be a big buzz on that.
Bro, I think what people saw was like pay-per-view. Like, it's a whole new ballgame with Netflix. Like, you just stream it on there, and Netflix is happy with the money that they're getting back from the ads because of how many people actually watch it. This was like how it used to be back in like Ali days in the 80s when fights were free on television. And Mike Tyson fought on regular Fox and did one of the highest ratings ever. It was because the advertisers were paying, you know, getting top dollar for those commercial breaks. And you saw like 70, 80, 90 million people tune in. And that's what you saw with this model. You saw 65 million homes watch this because it was on Netflix. It was more accessible. And everyone still made their money, which it was an experiment. I don't know how it's going to trickle down to like a Canelo or someone out there. But I just think that Netflix is in the discussions now, from what I've heard and people I was talking to, in terms of they might bid on certain fights if they're big enough and it makes sense.
You know, like back in the day when Ali fought and you had like, you know, all those like millions of people, there was only like five channels then. So there wasn't,
there was no Netflix to watch.
So like the fact that Mike can still pull numbers like that when there's so many fucking other things to be doing. It's you cannot say enough about the allure of Mike.
Yeah, goosebumps. That's why when I did my hit, like 5 seconds before it, you know, they count you down. I'm always like have a feeling of like, holy shit. And no matter what I do, no matter what level and how many people are going to be watching, that one was like the ultimate holy shit moment for me where I was like, there's a lot of people watching this and I better not just like fall over or like forget how to read or like have a Chuck Giampa moment. They're like, let me take you inside the mind of a judge.
Oh, Chuck Giampa. That was the worst.
Dude, I could have been memed forever if I didn't get the words out. But I appreciate everyone, the messages, and our faithful listeners checking in on social media and all the texts and stuff. It was a really cool experience. And I said this on Twitter, like I don't get to do what I'm doing without people listening every single week and buying into our content. I don't do those things without people like, you know, our listeners and our people loving our stuff. So thank you, everyone out there.
I think you would anyway. You talk to a wall. You would just talk to a wall.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be on Netflix. I wouldn't be on DraftKings if it wasn't for everyone tuning in to us every single week. And so thank you, everybody. Let's get to the fight of the night. And 50 million homes were watching Taylor Serrano 2. There was a lot of talk leading into this fight that, oh, they should have their own main event. They should have their own this or that. I think that obviously everyone was wrong about that because
Why?
The amount of messages I got from friends and family that, or amount of tweets that I saw from people that never tweet about boxing. Holy shit. Who is Amanda Serrano? Oh my God, Taylor. Giving their opinions on who they thought won. This is the best fight I've ever seen. Things like that. 50 million homes watching the most watched female fight of all time. This was the stage for the rematch. I didn't think we'd be able to get a bigger stage than MSG. Didn't think we'd be able to get a better fight than the first one. It lived up to the hype. The fight was awesome. I personally thought Amanda Serrano won the fight barely. I would have been fine with a draw. The fact that Taylor got the 1 point taken away for the excessive headbutting, it was hard to see how she could win the fight. I know I tweeted that Amanda was robbed. I was just being silly. Everyone was like holding me to the fire for that. What did you see? Because we haven't even talked about this off the air or anything. I thought Amanda won close. She threw more punches. She landed more punches. Awesome fight, though. Great event. And that's what kind of what it should be all about.
I thought Amanda won the fight as well. Paulie thought Katie won. Regardless, it was a very close fight. But listen, this goes back to what I always say. When you have women's fight at this level, they cannot fight for 2 minute rounds, 10 rounds. There needs to be more. We need to be able to see. They're too evenly matched, and it's so hard to separate who's winning a round. It needs to change. That should have been a 3 minute fight, a 10-3.
Well, Amanda wanted it. Amanda has fought 12 3 in rounds two or three times in her career. Yep. Taylor would not go for it. The only thing Taylor gave in on was the weight. She brought it down to 138, but Taylor would not do 12 threes. She said afterwards, for the third fight, if there is one, I'll do 12 threes. I think that's the only way.
10 threes? 10 threes or 12?
12 threes.
They can do 12 threes.
Wow. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if they'll ever fight again. I mean, Katie Taylor was talking about retirement all week long. She has nothing more to prove. She's 2-0 against Amanda Serrano. But
yeah,
the only way
she's got money to make, though.
I know. You'd be silly not to jump on this again. But the only way to determine a clear winner, because the first fight, I thought Serrano won too, but I can see a better case for Taylor.
I thought the first fight was a draw.
Okay. My point exactly. Close to both of them could have been draws. Yep. The only way to determine a legitimate winner, clear winner, is to extend it, and you can do that under this rule set. It's been done before. So 12 threes for Taylor and Serrano, come on. That's a no-brainer.
Thank you. Thank you. We got to do it. They're too good. We want to see more of them anyway. So do you understand 10 twos is 20 minutes, guys? It's 20 minutes of fighting. That's not enough time. It's not enough time to separate unified best females in the world, like literally. But regardless, the fight was awesome. It was a really, really good, entertaining scrap. Ebbs and flows, back and forth. Both women were very successful in certain parts of the fight. Serrano's power is legit. She is very, very strong. Katie's will and she's just her guts are. She has the guts of a bandit, using a Jim Lampley line. I mean, she jumps in there, fires those shots. The left hook was a great weapon for her this time against the southpaw. Really, really good weapon. That cut was horrible. Horrible. That was one of the worst cuts I've ever seen. Worst cut I've ever seen in a female fight. But good God. Wide open. And there were a couple headbutts where they were like slashing. Like she hit her head and then also like came down. And guys, braids. I used to fight with braids. Braids make it worse. And guys who had braids, it would actually cut up my face a lot more. It's a more abrasive. So that was opening that cut. That thing was wide open. Nasty, nasty cut.
I don't know if Katie Taylor is a dirty fighter. I know that's what Amanda said.
She's rough. She's rough. I don't think she's dirty.
She's rough. Very good. That's a good way to put it. She's rough. I love how Jordan Maldonado, the trainer of Serrano, who I think the world got to understand him, who I've known over the years, very passionate, put it that way. Amanda, he's like, Katie's a great woman, but she fights dirty. And I was actually surprised that Amanda actually reiterated it too after the fight. But I wouldn't say that Taylor, the dirty fight, would say she's aggressive. The referee went from zero warnings to taking a point away.
I know.
Which was very strange.
But it didn't matter anyway.
Didn't matter anyway. When I rewatched it yesterday, Jordan was in the corner when the doctor came over, and he wasn't saying they should stop it, but he's like, oh man, look at that thing. That's bad. That's bad. I do think that this is just me speculating, that maybe Serrano's team wanted to stop it and go to the scorecards after the fifth or sixth round.
They probably would have won. Oh, I don't know. Because have you seen the scorecards?
I should pull them up and get them. But I thought Serrano won three of the first four rounds before the cut. I think
the fight took
a drastic turn after the cut. The sixth round, the cut opens even wider. The seventh round, rock 'em sock 'em robots. The eighth round, they combined to land like 100 punches each.
In 2 minutes. It's crazy.
Dude, it was absurd. The arena at that point was full. So there's 70,000 going absolutely bananas. It was so loud in there during some of those flurries in that seventh round. It was just epic. And I couldn't believe that it was like bigger than the first fight at MSG, which was one of my favorite fight settings ever. One of the most fun fight I've ever been to. Even guys like Dave Portnoy, El Perez from Barstool, was like, the best boxing event I've ever been to was Taylor Serrano 1. He's like, and this just exceeded it somehow in terms of the fight, not just being there as well. But 95-94, three times, even with the point deduction, is a little fishy to me. I know the stats are everywhere right now. MVP is posting them. Big-time accounts are posting our CompuBox stats. Serrano landed a lot more. She threw a lot more. But there are certain fights
that was a big difference this fight than the last fight. Serrano tired out. She kind of puttered out at the end and gave
because of the cut.
No, the first fight.
Oh, the first fight.
So Katie, because she rocked Katie really bad in those middle rounds, and then Katie put on an amazing comeback and really pushed the dial the last couple of rounds. And Serrano just wasn't doing enough this time, though. I thought Serrano's
first round.
She hurt in the first round, but also I thought Amanda's gas tank was much better down the stretch, which is one of the reasons I had her winning. I thought she finished pretty good. She got really worked over in the first fight in the last couple of rounds. This fight, not so much, not at all. So
yeah.
That's why I thought that the difference in this fight was actually Serrano's conditioning, because she didn't putter out like she did the first time.
She landed over 300 punches, the most ever by a female in a fight in 40 years of CompuBox. A lot of them, those came late too.
Well, she took the power off late. She wasn't hitting quite as hard. She was trying to match Katie's energy, because Katie was landing some really good left hooks and short punches on the inside. So Amanda made an adjustment and took some of the power off her shots to be quicker.
I want to say that the broadcast, I heard a lot about the bias. There was some biasness. They had Rosie Perez in there, who's Puerto Rican from New York. Amanda Serrano is Puerto Rican and from New York. Moro Ranallo, right after the decision, just started screaming robbery and was like saying how this is the problem with boxing. I didn't agree with that because, God, like, come on, man. There's a majority of everyone watching are not hardcore fans. We don't have to get right into the bad parts of boxing, like, you know, bad decisions. It wasn't a bad decision. It was a very close fight that could have went either way. I just thought it should have been a little more of a celebratory tone.
We both thought Serrano won, but neither one of us are mad that she didn't. Like, it's not like it wasn't robbery at all. It's a very close fight.
What's most important is the event that they put on. Like, what this is going to do for women's boxing was desperately needed a shot in the arm, because since their fight in 2022, you know, where 2022 was the year of women's boxing, and it kind of fell off a little bit. Melissa Bumgarner being out and inactive, Clarissa Shields not having a worthy opponent. Amanda and Katie not fighting each other again since 2022. There just wasn't enough big moments in boxing, women's boxing. This, once again, put it back on the map. So they have a chance to kind of run with it from here. In terms of a third fight, I don't know if we get the third fight. Katie Taylor's talking about retirement. She's 38 years old.
The only reason for it to happen would be money. What, Katie doesn't need to prove anything. She's got two wins now over Serrano. Also, Serrano hurts her every fight. So do we really want to put yourself out there again and get hurt?
And is 37.
Potentially lose. And is 37. Like, these are not.
And they have a lot of money.
They have a lot of money now.
They made a lot of money on Friday night.
Katie's a gold medalist, multiple division world champion, been in two of the best women's fights of all time. How much more do you do?
I know, and shout out to Katie. I think Amanda got a lot of the fanfare because this was an MVP show. She's more marketable than Katie Taylor.
Yeah.
The broadcast was leaning towards Serrano. Shout out to Katie.
So I didn't listen. So we weren't listening to the broadcast, so I didn't hear any of the commentary because it was
like you have Rosie Perez who doesn't call fights, and she was excited. Like, whenever Serrano landed something, she literally screamed, Rosie Perez. Like, she just screamed, what a punch!
You can't have that. You gotta have unbiased.
It was very lean towards Serrano. Like, come on. Like, Katie Taylor is not some slouch. Like you said, she's a freaking gold medalist, and she's the reigning undisputed champion in two weight classes. She's unbelievable. Like, her will, like you said, Chris, is it's up there with the Usyks of the world in terms of I will not lose.
Yep.
And it's really awesome. I just can't say enough about these two ladies and what they've done over 20 rounds. Let's get
have you ever met Katie?
Rounds. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's the most unassuming person ever.
Oh, she's a delight. She is just a lovely, lovely lady. I met her we were in Liverpool. She fought on my undercard for the Ben fight. And I hugged her and I was like, I couldn't believe her back. She was like, it felt like a coiled, like, navel rope. Like, she was so strong. I was like, wow. I mean, That is an athlete. She is a very, very strong lady.
A coiled navel rope. That is so accurate.
Exactly.
She lives in Connecticut, which I found to be interesting. And she has a very unassuming life. She's in a small town in Connecticut. Yeah. It's just funny to see her up there with all the fanfare and like up on the stage with Mike Tyson, up on the stage with Toronto, like this whole thing. But she doesn't want that life.
She's
I just want to go back to Connecticut and live my life and
train
and
in a barn and just
exactly. She might be done, but hopefully they fight again just for our entertainment. But who knows? That was awesome. Also, Mario Barrios and Abel Ramos, absolute war.
Whoa,
that was great to have that on this card. And for people that were tuning
especially
in,
especially so unexpected because Barrios was supposed to, Abel Ramos has 6 losses and this is a world title fight, he's not supposed to be a world champion. The guy almost does it.
I just love that the card was really good, and we got an action fight early on in the night because the prelims went all 30 rounds. That was a tough. Bruce Carrington went all 20.
Bruce looked good, though. Bruce looked good.
Bruce did look good. Shadazer Green won a world title. That's getting really lost in the sauce. Happy for her.
She's good. I like her.
She's awesome. But Barrios and Ramos both hit the canvas. Barrios goes down early. Ramos goes down a little bit later, and Barrios is a world titleist at 147. And my main takeaway from this fight is that if you're at 140 right now, if you're Devin Haney, if you're Teofimo Lopez, if you're Ryan Garcia, and you want to win a belt, like there is opportunities. Like Barrios is a vulnerable fighter. I mean, knew that heading in, but to see him get dropped and see him kind of struggle,
I didn't think he was that vulnerable. That was not good.
But we see that's why we watch the fights and we see what we see. And now we have to grade Barrios from here on out on what we just saw against Abel Ramos. I think that that title that he holds right now is he can get himself into a big fight. And these guys at 140, these young guns, should be licking their chops to try to get a piece of Barrios and win that title at 147 and maybe lock in at 147 at welterweight, which is a division that desperately needs some names in there. I think we're going to see that.
It also shows you how weak this division is. Like, 147 is wide open. Wide open. Listen, Barrios last that night. I mean, he's so front foot heavy. He was eating shots, eating jabs. A guy like Devin, he's going to stay away and keep the jab on you. He beats him all night long. Ryan probably knocks him out. You're right. Any one of those guys can jump up there. Tio would put on a master class because his distance control. That fight really showed that really what level Barrios is on. And because I was thinking Barrios was one of the, you know, he's obviously one of the champions. I'm like, I like Barrios. I like what he's doing. He looked really good in the Ugas fight, but Ugas is like 200 years old. So maybe that was why. But this really shows you that Barrios is, he's really not on the championship level. And that belt is probably going to be changing hands sooner than later.
Yeah, and you have Brian Norman holding the WBO. You have Stanionis holding.
He's untested. Brian Norman had one good performance.
And you have Stanionis, who's so inactive. And who has the other belt?
Boots.
And Boots is definitely going to 154, from what I heard, to fight Virgil Ortiz or someone there.
That's awesome.
I don't know. If Boots stays, then that changes things. In terms of some of these other names getting involved, but I love the fight, number one. I thought it was a great action fight for the type of event, and the casuals that were tuning in were very happy with that. To go from Barrios Ramos to Taylor Serrano, couldn't ask for anything better, because I was a little worried about how was this undercard going to play out. Not Serrano so much, but this fight. Awesome fight. We'll see what happens at 147. All in all, that was the Netflix card on Friday night. We'll see if Netflix gets back into boxing, but I thought it was a fun card, top to bottom. The Serrano Taylor delivered, Barrios Ramos delivered. The main event gave us some quality moments, so that was good stuff.
I mean, the main event gave us Mike Tyson. The main event gave us Mike Tyson.
Friggin' Tyson. Over to the DAZN card.
Good card too, man. Woo!
Jeez. Headlined by Zerto Ramirez outclassing, outpointing Chris Billiam Smith in the main event. This was Latino night, 5-on-5, Golden Boy's first foray into Saudi Arabia. Fight definitely belonged in Southern California. It was not much of an atmosphere at all in Saudi, but the fights were good. So we'll start with the main event. Zerto wins.
Which was fight of the night. That was the best fight of the night, which is awesome. Great. When the main event lives up and actually is the show, it's amazing. And that fight was fantastic. Zerto is a problem, dude.
Yeah. Get into it, man. What do you think of him? What do you think of him at Cruiserweight? Because now this is not two big wins. He's unified. Mm-hmm. It's a guy that was, I wouldn't say struggling at 175, but just kind of lost the top rank and, you know, lost that, got shut out by Bivol. Goes to Cruiserweight and has now reestablished himself.
Well, I think I said it right away when he was the first fight at Cruiserweight when he fought Joe Smith. I go, I like him a lot better at Cruiserweight. I think this is going to really fit him well. I really think he was struggling to make 175. He was killing himself to make that weight. I've heard that he walks around very heavy. Even when he's at 175, I heard he was walking around like close to 220. That's like 50 pounds, dude. Taking that weight off is no joke. And it showed in the Bivol fight. Yes, he got outclassed, but honestly, he had no juice. He had no gas in that fight. And you see him now at Cruiser. I mean, the guy's endurance is out of control. He throws a lot of punches. And one thing about Zerto, which makes him so dangerous, aside from the fact that he's a southpaw, he's got a granite chin, he throws a ton of punches, he's got a great gas tank, he's obviously skilled, and he's a killer body puncher. He's used to dealing with faster hands. The guy was a world champion, 168. He's now fighting 200 pounds. So you got these 200-pounders who are lumbering around him, and he's able to move, he's able to throw fast shots, he sees the punches coming. He's a problem. I was really looking forward to this fight because I think Chris Billingsmith is good and had an opportunity to win this fight. But after seeing what Zerto did to him, I thought he was going to stop him. Chris Billingsmith is a hard man. Jesus, he took so many punches. Zerto might be the guy. I'm not saying that Opatai beats him. I'm not saying that. I like Opatai. I really like Opatai. I can see Zerto beating him.
That's the big thing here. Now, he's unified Zerto Ramirez. Opatai is looked at as the best cruiserweight in the world right now if those Breedis wins and some other destructive wins as well.
No, he's fantastic. I love Opatai.
That fight can be made now in Saudi easily, and that's what they're going to do. They're going to make this fight. And Opatai is very good, but he struggled a little bit in that rematch with Breedis, and he's definitely destructive, but Zerto is a complete boxer. Zerto is... can break Opatai down. I see some weaknesses in Opatai lately. I see some cracks in that defense lately. I would not be shocked. I think Opatai would be the favorite slightly.
Yep.
But I think Zerto's a very, very live dog. When those odds come out, I can't wait to see it. I would not be shocked.
Yeah, I think I would too.
I think he'd probably be like a plus 130 to open up. And, you know, these are some good wins for Zerto. And he's a big guy and he's at the weight. It just gives Cruiserweight some juice, because that's a division that has never had much of anything. It's a stopping point for bigger guys to go to heavyweight.
It's changed now, though, and there's a couple of reasons it's changed. One is that we've now gone into the era of super heavyweights, right? So the heavyweight division's just gotten bigger. So you don't see these 220s unless you're Usyk and you're, you know, amazing. You're seeing these 260 to 280 pound heavyweights who are athletic. It's a different era. And now, so you've got that area where those smaller heavyweights just don't fit in anymore. So they can strip themselves down to cruiserweight. Also, cruiserweight went up 10 pounds. It used to be 190. Now it's 199. Mm-hmm. So under 200 pounds. So now you've got a little bit of I know there's a Bridger weight class, which is stupid, but cruiserweight has become like the Bridger weight now. And you've just got talented guys. And because there's not a lot of money to be made there, or not a lot of fanfare, they're all fighting each other. So we're getting great fights, good fights. You know, we saw that with Usyk when they did that tournament. He's able to unify. And he fought all the best guys around. And it's just gone off that. So now guys don't have to just use cruiserweight as a jumping off point to heavyweight. You can actually make a career and money at cruiserweight. And it's beautiful because we're seeing great fights. So we have another good weight class to deal with. I mean, these are excellent fights. These guys are fighting each other.
Yeah, hopefully they do fight, and hopefully there more cruiserweights emerge. Because when you think of cruiserweight, you think of Evander Holyfield on his way to heavyweight. You think of Alexander Usyk on his way to heavyweight. You don't think of a long lasting cruiserweight career, a long reign there. Opatai's been there for a minute now because he's just not a bridgerweight, and bridgerweight's just not a thing. He's not a heavyweight. Like Oscar was talking about Zerto, was floating out a heavyweight run for Zerto, which is what a promoter does.
I could see that, though. I really could. He's got the frame for it. What is he, 6'4"?
6'5"? Big boy.
He's huge, but he's long, too. And, like, you can see, like, he's a little bit softer on the midsection. He's a Mexican guy, but, like, he could put muscle on top. And because he easily, walks, he's, what is that, 220? So yeah, 200 pounds, excuse me, a cruiserweight. He easily could be 220, 225. You put a couple more pounds on him, you get him to 230, you know, with some solid weight, 100%. With
if he beats Opetai. Yeah.
With his style, he could be a problem for heavyweights. He's a great body puncher. Like he sapped Billiam Smith's power late in that fight.
Yeah. Billiam Smith is tough, man. He took a lot of punishment. They could have stopped that fight in midway through. I was shocked at the beating he did enough
to just stay in there. Like he kept throwing that left hook was gnarly. He landed some really mean, and he's strong. I was surprised. The chin on Zerto is impressive.
Arnold Barboza, Jose Ramirez. I was not excited about this fight. It ended up being an absolute dud. Barboza gets the win. I don't know what has happened to Jose Ramirez. Long bouts of inactivity.
He's an old 32.
He's got one less payday. He's 32. I thought
they're both 32. No, he's an old 32. He's been around for a long time. You got to remember, he was an Olympian. He was a world champion for a number of years. Super dominant guy. In his prime, he wins this fight all day long. But
yeah, he was awesome at 140 during that run. Yeah,
destructive,
great
jab, awesome body puncher. It's just not there. He didn't have his in and out after the first round. He couldn't keep it up. The legs are not there. And Barboza's corner kept saying he's got no legs. His legs are gone. You got to step it up. But Barboza never steps on the gas.
He doesn't
He's
have
just
it in his
so
DNA.
Cautious. Everything is just stay tight. Bing, bing, bing. I mean, he's good. He's a tough style to deal with, but he's not going to move the needle. And this is why he hasn't moved the needle, because these are the kind of fights he puts on.
Couldn't agree more. And I like Barboza, good dude. But these types of fighters that don't seize opportunities really annoy me. And I don't feel too bad for them when Barboza goes on, why can't I get this show? Why am I not a bigger star? Why isn't my promoter taking better care of me? Because he's changed promoters now. He's with Golden Boy. Because of this reason. When you have a wounded freaking deer in front of you, and Jose Ramirez just asking to get stopped, and your corner's telling you to do it.
He was walking on his heels. Literally, his legs were completely gone. Like walking
right,
on his heels.
That's my
if
point.
Barboza took a step forward, he would have pushed Ramirez back the whole time.
Get a TKO win, and then pound your chest, and then talk about fighting some of these guys at 140. Barboza is technically a top guy at 140, but I don't see any future. I'm not excited to watch him fight for a title at 140. I'm not excited to see him mix it up with some of those names at 140. That's because he didn't take a risk. Take a risk, man, and then you would be able to talk more afterwards about why you feel like you're mistreated, whatever. He stays undefeated and he'll get another shot in there. So William Zepeda and Tevin Farmer. Ooh. I owe you an apology.
Yeah.
I owe you an apology, Tevin, because when this fight was announced, I was like, this is disgusting. They're setting him up to get slaughtered. But boy, was I wrong. He drops Zepeda early, gives him issues. For Farmer, this is back-to-back performances against really good young guys at 135, Raymond Murataya, he gave him some problems, and now gets a split decision loss against Zepeda.
And
I think
shows
a lot of
newfound power.
Yeah, I think a lot of this is about how the resurgence of Tevin Farmer. But a big takeaway from this fight is what the heck is up with William Zepeda? Like, because he's going to be fighting Shakur soon. What did you see, and were you a little troubled by what you saw?
He started out great. He looked awesome. He was landing so many shots on a very difficult, normally very difficult and slippery Tevin Farmer. And then once he got dropped, the whole fight changed. The whole thing changed. What are my takeaway? My takeaway is Tank starches him, and Shakur beats him 10-2. Can't beat either one of those guys. Tank knocks him out in five rounds, and he barely touches Shakur.
I think Shakur might be able to stop him, too. If Shakur wants to get more in there, I think he might walk into something, Zepeda. But the way I look at this is I would much rather Zepeda went in there and looked amazing so we can get ourselves a legitimate hyped-up fight between him and Shakur.
Dan, I disagree. I said this on a show last week. I go, you would be that bad if Zepeda didn't. I mean, if Zepeda did not look that good. Because he's going to get those big fights, dude. How many times do we see a guy not have a good performance and they get step right into a big fight?
I get it. I know that Shakur now is going to be even chomping more at the bit to fight him. And, you know, I was shocked that Shakur is going to jump right into Zepeda coming off the hand injury. But there was part of me that wanted to see Zepeda look outstanding. And then we have ourselves a lot of momentum heading into this fight. So there's no excuses, because I really like Shakur Stevenson and I want him to get a win where everyone could just kind of get off his back a little bit and we can start building up towards the tank fight. We can have a legitimate star in boxing because we desperately need it. So now Shakur beats Cepeda 10-2. What do we say now? Oh, Cepeda sucks anyway. Look, he struggled with Devin
That's
Farmer.
That's exactly what's going to happen. Gonna be like, I mean, he barely got by 35-year-old Tevin Farmer, you know, 34-year-old Tevin Farmer. That's exactly.
I mean, it is what it is. There's nothing we could do about it. I mean,
poor Shakur, man. He cannot get his just due.
Oh, he was tweeting like, "This is food." He was like, "This guy is nothing." Like, I was like, maybe you should. I don't know. Like, the whole point is that you're fighting the boogeyman. It's like when you fought Provodnikov. It's like, oh, you're fighting the boogeyman and you disarm the boogeyman. Like, I wanted to see Shakur do that. Like, Cepeda moments.
That's what Floyd used to do. Remember how much he used to talk up all of his opponents? Even when guys weren't that good.
Most brilliant thing Floyd did from a marketing standpoint.
Brilliant. He talked up all of his opponents every single time.
Hell of a fighter, he would say. He's a hell of a fighter. And that's the way to do it. I hated when the guys of today will just say my opponent's
just
nothing.
Just trash. Like, then, okay. Well, how's that make you look? If you struggle now, you just told everybody the guy's trash and now you struggle. So what are we talking about?
Yeah, so Shakur Stevenson says he will fight William Cepeda in February. This February card I'm hearing is supposed to be pretty big, this next Riyadh card for February. And we could see Shakur and Cepeda on that. We could see... I've even heard rumblings of Bivol Beterbiev popping up on that. I would be shocked because that's kind of. I heard a little rumbling this weekend.
Didn't Bob say something about waiting until next year for Beterbiev?
I know, after Ramadan. I do know Dubois will be on it potentially against a top opponent.
I heard. I'm hearing Parker.
I would love to see that.
That's
I love
a tough
to see
fight.
Parker
that's
get
a tough,
in there.
Dubois can lose to Parker. Parker's a banana peel, man. And he's really coming into his own.
I still think Cepeda is dangerous. I still think...
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Not only is he dangerous, he's just a fun style to watch. And his style, going up against Shakur's style, is still going to be must-watch. Yeah, he did struggle with Tevin Farmer. Put some respect on Tevin Farmer's name. This is a former world champion, a guy that pretty much left the sport after not having a top promoter. I know he's back with Lou DiBella. But shout-out to Tevin Farmer for you know, dropping Cepeda, getting a split to getting a, you know, one judge to have him winning and just now getting more fights. He's going to get more dates. This guy's going to get more paydays because he's given some good rounds to these guys. So shout out to Farmer.
Yeah, no, he's going to walk. Dude, don't be surprised if he fights Tank.
Tank. That was supposed to be the fight in like 2016. Remember?
Yeah, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a Tank fight.
Oh my God. That is a throwback. He was pushing for that fight hard to fight Tank. Mm-hmm. I remember that way back. But I like Shakur and Cepeda still. I think
we're gonna get it too.
Yeah, I think 100% gonna get it now. We'll see how that one plays out. I didn't see the Collazo fight. That's the only fight I missed.
Oh man, is he good? Wow, I'd never seen him before. This is minimum weight, guys. We're talking about 105 pounds. He's Puerto Rican. I think he was 8-0. In this, or
I called one of his fights in Puerto Rico on the Jake Paul Manny Serrano card in February. Yeah, he's good.
He's tremendous. Like I was really impressed. His consistency, his body work, his balance. He was fighting a guy who was 25-0 and also a world champion. And he just demolished him, took him apart. It was competitive a little bit early on, and then he just ran away with it, sort of dropping him every round. Killer body shots. Very impressed with that. That guy, and it's only he's got less than 10 fights. I think he's 9-0 with like 8 knockouts now.
Good card. Latino night came through. I wish it was in Southern California, but as we know, you can't always get what you want in boxing. We got the fights.
I'll take a good card if it's in Saudi. I don't care. Good boxing is just good boxing.
It was just funny to see Latino night in Saudi Arabia.
But also, not all the guys on the card were Latino. That was another.
The A side was.
That's not a good sign. You shouldn't do that.
I love that they had like mariachi bands and all this stuff in a.
Did you see Oscar's outfit?
Yeah,
he looked good. He looked good
in Saudi.
That was cool.
In Saudi Arabia. All in all, unbelievable week and weekend for boxing. Boxing was in the forefront this week. Good, bad, and the ugly. That's usually what the sport is. From Mike Tyson and Jake Paul, all the way down to Saudi Arabia in a fun card for the hardcores out there. Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano put on a show. Man, it's a lot to unpack and just kind of every once in a while, boxing gets into the forefront,
and it never stays there. But we get there.
You got to take advantage of it. Yeah, so
it's like a whale breaching the surface. You got to take the picture when you have the moment, but you're not going to get a lot of opportunities.
Yeah. So we will go back. We'll let the Tyson Jake Paul glow come off a little bit, and then we'll be back to talking about purse bids. And all the nitty gritty
nuances of the boxing game.
Love that. All right, everybody. We'll see you later in the week to break down the fights this upcoming weekend and any news and notes. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Please stay out of my DMs because there's too many now for this. There's too many DMs.
Welcome to my world, bro.